never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, cliques, and social coteries.
That's me.
Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
Hey, this is the Underground, and this theme is the no theme theme. So, okay.
Hey, this is Jennifer, and I'm reading a story I wrote called Meritocracy. To give you a little background, I wrote this for my PSU English class, loosely based on Kafka's story, The Metamorphosis. If you're not familiar with it, it tells the story of a young man isolated from society who gets turned into a giant insect. While no one in the story literally gets turned into a bug, it deals with the same themes of alienation. So, okay, here's Meritocracy. Brant Burkle had been a precocious child. He had learned to read at the age of 3 years old, and because of this exceptional feat, he had gone to only the best schools and gotten a fine liberal arts education. He had majored in archaeology, always having a passion for the past, but having made few discoveries in recent years, he had been demoted to the position of a clerk and had to suffer such indignities as wearing grade 128 suspenders and using 11p dental floss. To make matters worse, he had in the last year or two began to lose some of his thin crop of sandy hair and developed a bit of a paunch in the stomach area. Such matters plagued Brant endlessly, and he feared for his national rank. On this particular day, it was wet and dreary out, which was not unusual for the outskirts of Seattle, where Brant and his family resided. Brant stretched his arm over to the other side of the bed and found that the blankets were still fairly warm. His wife, Ivana, must have only just arisen. Brant was having more and more difficulty these days getting out of bed, although he was very much aware of the negative effects it must be having on his productivity at the office. Ivana, on the other hand, seemed as vital as ever, if not more, to compensate for her husband's waning luster. She was a handsome woman in her late 30s with flowing red hair that she dyed weekly and a wry sense of humor. She was 11 years older than Brant, who was 27. Younger men were encouraged to marry successful older women. In this way, promising young girls didn't have to sacrifice careers for marriage and child-rearing, and men were not tempted to a life of hedonism. Brant donned his faded navy blue house slippers and slowly made his way down to the kitchen, noticing with chagrin the peeling paint of the hallway and the heaps of dust shoved haphazardly into the corner. "Hi, Daddy," cried his six-year-old daughter, Rebecca, giving him a wide-eyed gap-toothed grin. In her left hand was a spoon full of soggy, half-eaten grade C Cheerios, forgotten in the sheer excitement of seeing her father. "Hey there, princess, how's Daddy's little girl this morning?" he said, ruffling her blonde hair affectionately. "Brant, how many times have I told you not to condescend to Rebecca? Your continual baby talk is stunting her vocabulary, and I'm sure it's part of the reason why she's coming home with such poor marks. When I was that age..." Ivana looked wistfully into her triple venti latte, which the Starbucks van delivered piping hot to their house every morning. For a second, Brant thought she looked quite pretty, idle for once, until she snapped back to attention and this brief attraction faded. "Oh, and it's your turn to drive her to her cello lesson. You know, I've already done it 3 times this week." Brant nodded a wordless assent and proceeded to grind his own meager cup of coffee. Personally, he didn't fully agree with his wife's methods of raising their daughter. Becca seemed perfectly content to draw elaborate nonsense pictures with her crayons and watch cartoons, and seemed to have no predilection for either learning to read or playing the cello, which she complained hurt her hands. As far as Brant could see, there was no point in pushing her beyond her natural talents. The point of a meritocracy was not to overexert its citizens, but to reward them for their inherent skill. But try as he might, Brant could not help but understand Ivana's position. If Rebecca didn't begin to perform a little higher, she would be treated like a second-class citizen the rest of her life. While Brant's home life was not what one would call perfect, the state of his career was even more abysmal. Every day, Brant dreaded going to work and dreaded almost as much returning home. Most of all, he feared confrontation with his boss, a Mr. Volksmith, who had elongated, graceless arms and legs, a nasally voice, and an aggressive demeanor. In fact, he reminded Brant altogether of an overgrown praying mantis. Brant sat at his desk, painfully aware of the splinter digging into the back of his thigh. but he was terrified to complain to his superiors, lest they accuse him of being ungrateful and demote him even further. At times, he was afraid of just moving around too much, since such odd behavior would only draw more attention to himself. While technically Brandt was supposed to be documenting the whereabouts of the firm's most recently found artifact, a pre-modern manuscript whose author was a man by the name of Franz Kafka, he felt that this time his time was better employed observing his co-workers. Since he was the lowest-ranking employee at the firm, Brandt had the most and the most demeaning work to do, including scraping rock-hard, graying chewing gum off the park benches in the company recreation center, but it seemed to him that the other people on the team did next to no work at all. For the most part, he observed them congregating around the water cooler like a herd of barely civilized animals. Or an even more apt metaphor, he thought to himself, was a collection of insects gathering around a rogue drop of jelly left on a blanket after a messy and unsatisfactory picnic. In fact, there was a very insect-like quality to all of his co-workers. Nancy, who strutted around the office in 3-inch red heels, flirting shamelessly with Mr. Volksmith, would be the seemingly harmless ladybug. And Gary, the small, round, graying manager with severe astigmatism and a phenomenal memory for gossip, would be the dung beetle. Brandt chuckled to himself softly until he started to attention. His own name had been mentioned. That Brandt Burkle, he just has not been contributing anything to the team. His reports are always coffee-stained, his spelling is shoddy, and he's always tripping over his own shoelaces, said Mr. Volksmith in his nasally drawl. Brandt has always resented this notion that the office staff was a team, when in fact they were anything but. Or if they were a team, they were the kind of team that Brandt had been able to opt out of in grade school because of his superior braininess. Yeah, he seriously hasn't been pulling his weight, said Nancy, always quick to agree. Not that he doesn't have enough of it, Gary said, smirking, and they all laughed in unison. Brandt cowered behind his 2189 computer, unable to get their words out of his head. Where did Gary get off mentioning his weight anyways? He wondered superfluously. Brandt stayed in his cubicle most of the morning, venturing out only for a granola bar from the vending machine before scuttling nervously back to his desk. He knew what was coming. It was only a matter of time. Sure enough, right when the clock struck 11, 2 highly generic white men in designer suits approached him. He shivered in terror. If he left his job, there was no doubt that Ivana would leave him and take Becca with her out of spite. Mr. Burkle, upper management has decided that you are no longer needed at Emery & Binks Incorporated. Your employment will be terminated at 12:35 today, and additionally, you have been demoted 7 ranks. Feel free to consult your good citizen's handbook for guidance about your new role in society. They left as quickly as they had come, like a couple of worker ants executing yet another mission. Brandt slowly packed his belongings into a cardboard box. He found that he had very few, just a couple pictures of his wife and daughter on a bygone vacation, his stapler and a package of stale, half-eaten raisins, ostensibly from the week before. He ate one, and considered spitting it out before remembering that with his newly degraded rank, this was what most of his food was going to taste like. Brandt had no intention of going home. He was very much aware of the reaction he would get from his wife. Instead, he wandered the city, looking up at row after row of identical buildings. They were all gray, all immaculate. He walked through the park, although he wasn't sure that this was allowed based on his new status. He didn't care. Brandt watched several ducks swiftly glide through the water, marveling at their freedom, a freedom he would never possess. It being November, the sky grew dark shortly after 4, and a gloomy and petulant rain began in earnest. He longed for the comforts of home. He arrived on his doorstep some 45 minutes later, completely waterlogged. He rang the doorbell, which sounded in a grating hum, but after several seconds, there was no reply, and he fumbled in his pocket for the keys. Upon letting himself inside, Brandt realized there was nothing more that he longed to do than throw himself onto the bed and sleep. He vaguely recalled his dream from the night before, which had given him an overwhelming feeling of warmth and contentment, although the specifics were growing hazy. He wearily climbed the stairs and opened the door to his bedroom, only to find his wife sprawled out on the bed, wearing a skimpy pink negligee, arms around another man. Brandt could not help but notice that the man was several years younger than him and had a mass of curly blonde hair and a better physique. He had forgotten it was a Tuesday. "Brandt, do you think you could pick up Becca and maybe start dinner? I bought some chicken," said Ivana, nonchalantly. "Hey, man, your wife's pretty hot," said Ivana's court-martialed lover. This was a common practice in unsuccessful marriages to prevent the inefficiency and embarrassment of divorce. Brandt himself had never been high-ranking enough to be afforded this privilege. He tiptoed out of the room, trying to draw as little attention to himself as he could. Ivana and her lover resumed their former activity, not even bothering to notice that Brant had left the room. In fact, Brant was coming to realize nobody ever really seemed to notice whether he was there or not. It hardly even seemed to matter that he was, and at times Brant even doubted his own existence. Suddenly, he was struck by a painful headache. He peered into the bathroom cabinet to see if there were any aspirin, but all he encountered were two grade C dinosaur-shaped fluoride tablets that must have belonged to Rebecca. He decided to go to the drugstore around the corner. "I'd like a bottle of aspirin, please," he said to the enormous freckled woman behind the pharmacy counter. "Oh, I'm sorry, sir. It's a new government policy that people of the rank below 337F are no longer permitted to buy aspirin by the bottle. Would you like to buy the sample size of one or two tablets?" "I've got a really splitting headache. I don't think that just one or two is going to cover it," Brant tried to negotiate. "Sir, we sell a quality product, even at your level. I think it should be more than sufficient." Brant gave her a pleading look, and almost instantly the woman's countenance changed. "Mr. Burkle, how does she know my name?" Brant wondered, then realized she had looked him up in the database. "If you're trying to commit suicide, this is not the product to use. There are far more important people than you trying to kill themselves every day, and we don't have much of a backstock here at Rite Aid. Why don't you just try back in a month or two?" So, I'm Jennifer, and that was Meritocracy.
Woo!
Okay, thank you. That was Jennifer. And up next is Brianna, live interview with Super Sack.
Sorry about that. We're having some technical issues. We're going to play another piece right now. It's Kamaya and Jonathan, Friends of the Children.
Hi, this is Jonathan with Friends of the Children. The Friends of the Children started in 1993. There was only 24 children and 3 mentors. Now, in 2007, there is 270 kids and 35 mentors, and here is my mentor, Greg. Introduce yourself and tell us a few things about you.
Hi, my name is Greg Frank. I work at Friends of the Children. Friends of the Children is a mentoring program that serves approximately 300 children in the Portland metro area.
When did you start being a mentor?
I think I've always been a mentor, mentoring my younger brother when I was in the Boy Scouts, helping out when I was in the Marine Corps. I was a mentor for the younger guys in my squad and my platoon. So growing up, I was always mentoring somebody, but I started in Friends of the Children 9.5 years ago.
Okay. Why did you choose to be a mentor of Friends of the Children?
That's a very good question. I was working down at Marion County, Lynn Benton County, in the detention facility, and at Marion County at the education department, working with kids in the juvenile detention center. And I realized that working with them, the kids kind of seemed lost. They didn't have some positive direction. It seemed like the system had already judged those kids and had made their decision on what they could do with their potential, and it stopped there. And it was pretty much all I was doing, instead of educating them and helping them, I was breaking up gang fights. So I came home on a Friday night with a really bad headache, with blood on my shirt from one of the kids after they got in a fight when I was trying to break it up. And I got on the web and found Friends of the Children, and they were hiring right at that time. And it all just came together right there.
And who are you mentoring?
I mentor 8 boys. Their ages range from 6 years old all the way up to 15, and I see them twice a week, hopefully. And I work with them twice a week for approximately 4 hours a week up until they're 18 years of age.
So, Greg, tell me what you do with your kids, like, when you're mentoring them.
I do all sorts of things with them, depending on what the child and the family wants me to do with them. We have educational goals with the kids, like, mm-hmm. in the school, during the school year, I'm in the classrooms a lot, helping them on their reading, writing, as well as social skills in the classroom. And then in the summertime, it's a lot more fun, where we have a outdoor group called Thunder. We do hiking, camping. We do a lot of swimming, bicycle riding, a lot of basketball. My older guys are going through a big growth spurt, so they're always hungry, so we're always feeding the kids.
What goals do you have with Jonathan?
Oh, that's a great question. My goals for Jonathan, I've got short-term and long-term goals. Short-term goals are just to check in with him at least once a week, make sure that he's on the right page, focused on school, doing what he needs to do to just to get to and from school, that his grades are up, are solid, that he's respectful, that he's getting home, and that he's safe, that there's not any problems on the bus lines or MAX lines with the different gangs out there, that just to check in and make sure he's safe. And my long-term goals are to help him get a nice resume down, build some job skills, and get him a job that he can work, and then go from there to graduate from high school, go on to higher education,
yes,
whether it's at Mount Hood Community College, PCC, or further out, four-year college and beyond.
That's really interesting, because I'd be talking to him about education and how high school, he doesn't really like school that much, and I try to guide him through it.
Well, I can relate, because I didn't like high school. I thought high school was too cliquish, and I just wanted to get my education, get my diploma, and get in the workforce, because I thought high school was, you know, it was hurtful. It was, you know, I just didn't like the way a lot of it was portrayed on the kids. A lot of negativity stuff. So I can really relate why some of the reasons why our young men and women don't like to go to school. But my job is to help them overcome those obstacles, and to show that education is so vital in this day and age, with the computer age and all the technology that moves so fast, that they need this education to go on.
Tell me, how have you influenced Jonathan through your relationship?
Oh, I've influenced him quite a bit. I've helped him with his eating habits, how he's eating healthier, exercising. We've talked about problems that he's had, whether it's at school or at home, and just tried to work through it to be that's in a positive way for him and his family, and just to keep him safe traveling around the city on the bus and the MAX line, and just to make sure that he feels safe just going down to Lloyd Center to buy some socks.
Okay. How do you think Friends of the Children has helped Jonathan?
They've really helped me with supporting John with college applications, work applications, just to build those skills, and have reinforced what I've been saying when John rolls his eyes when I'm trying to say, you know, pull your pants up, don't sag, you know, wear nice clothes going into a job interview, eye contact, all those things that they reinforce, as well as they have provided teen space for homework, teen night on Friday nights where the kids can go out, stay out later, and, you know, just blow off steam, whether it's roller skating or at Bullwinkles or laser tag or something else. So they've done a really nice job.
I definitely agree. And so is there anything else you'd like to share with us about yourself, Jonathan, or the program?
Friends of the Children is an excellent program. I strongly believe in it. I've been there 9.5 years. This next year will be 15 years in business. So
really,
we expect great things in the next year, and I'm gonna be alongside John, pulling him, pushing him, supporting him. And I expect and I foresee great things out of Jonathan in the next few years.
That was Greg Frank, a professional mentor of Friends of the Children. And I interviewed two other participants of Friends of the Children, sharing their experiences in the program. Hello.
Hi, my name is Jordan. And my goals are to get the best grades I can.
Hi, I'm Demarie. I like to cook and hang out with my friends. And just do everything regular kids do.
So how many years have you been in Friends of the Children?
About maybe 7.
So who is your current mentor?
John Foster.
Well, for my first year in Friends of the Children, my mentor was Daryl. So then I had John for the rest of my time.
Okay, and what grade are you in?
Freshman next year.
A freshman.
And what are some of the activities that you guys do on a regular basis?
We just hang out. Sometimes we go to the bookstore or something like that.
Eat.
What is it that you like mostly about Friends of the Children?
It's a good way to get to know people and, like, learn new stuff.
There's some nice people here. Well, I like the internship program that I'm doing. It's pretty cool. I like the place where I'm working and the people I work with. It's nice.
And where are you interning at?
The Blue Hour restaurant downtown. You guys should come check it out sometime. Really good food.
Hi, this is Kendra Lay, and she is a program development associate at Friends of the Children. And Kamaya interviewed her Friday, July 20th.
Friends of the Children is an amazing program, I think, that helps youth reach their full potential. We start kids out in kindergarten here, and they get assigned a professional mentor who exposes them to all sorts of different activities.
So what interests you about working for Friends of the Children?
Well, I started with Friends of the Children when I was an AmeriCorps volunteer, actually. And so that's a volunteer program where you go and be with an organization for a year.
Like, what goals do you have for the kids? You know, like, what do you think they learned from the program so far?
Wow. Because our program has so many different ages in it, it really depends on the age, what the child is learning at that particular time.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share about Friends of the Children, about the kids, you know?
I had never worked with children before coming here, and I never actually saw myself working with children, but I found that I really enjoy it. I really, really like it. I learn a lot from all of the children here.
Another part of the Friends of the Children is the internship. The only way you could be an intern is if you're going in to the ninth grade or if you're already in high school. Kamaya is doing her second year with being an intern, and this is my first. This is the first interview we did at KBOO. Introduce yourself and tell me a few things about yourself.
Well, my name is Kamaya Tillman. I'm currently a senior at Benson High School. I've been involved in Friends of the Children since I was in kindergarten, I believe.
Who is your mentor?
My mentor is Carlos Holland, and she's my third mentor at the moment.
What kind of things do you do with your mentor?
Me and my mentor, we do a variety of things. You know, sometimes we'll just, you know, go and just hang out. There's not really anything we'll do. We'll just talk and have girl talk. Talk about personal issues, you know, girl issues, or we'll go bowling sometimes to the movies, or just hang out at friends and kick it with the other staff members and the other kids.
When did you start the program?
I started probably back in 1995.
Why do you like the program?
Friends of the Children has seriously benefited me since I've been in high school. It's always benefited me, but I never actually understood it until I was older to actually comprehend what they were doing to me, and I've learned that they're helping me get to college, helping me keep my grades up. My maturity level has seriously rose, like, straight up. I've learned how to respect people a lot more. I learned how to respect myself. I've gained lots of confidence through this program, and I've made a lot of friends also through this program.
How many mentors have you had?
I've had 3. My first one, her name was Cricket, and I had her from about kindergarten to, I believe, 2nd grade, I believe. And then my second mentor was Darla, and I had her from about 2nd to, like, 8th grade, and now I'm with Carlos.
Is there anything else you would like to talk about?
I want to give a shout-out to Friends of the Children, and I just want to thank them for giving me the opportunity to be in such a great program. I strongly do believe in this program. I believe that everybody, being that majority of the kids are coming from difficult background, they actually managed to succeed in making these kids graduate from high school and go to college. And I just am happy that they chose moi to be a part of such a special program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If you have any questions about the programs, sponsorships, or becoming a volunteer, contact us at 503-281-6633 or at pdxinfo@friendsofthechildren.org. This has been Kamaya Tillman and Jonathan Morris for the Youth Collective at KBOO.
Okay, thank you. That was, up next is Brianna's live interview with Antoinette on Super Sack. So, okay, thank you.
All right. Hi, this is Brianna with the Youth Collective, and I'm here with Antoinette Myers, who is a student representative on the Portland Public School Board.
Yes.
And could you tell us a little bit about your involvement with Super Sack and with the Portland School Board?
Sure. As student rep, I basically represent every single student in the Portland Public School District. And Super Sack is just a council to the superintendent. And we all come together from all the different high schools to talk about issues such as the enrollment transfer policy. A lot of policies that have come up that have been passed through the board. And what I do is from Super Sack, I go usually straight to the board meetings and I sit as the student board member. And I mean, I have a vote, but it doesn't, you know, it's not official. But I still represent the entire student voice. So as the student representative, I am exactly what it says, student representative. So it's a really cool job.
Awesome. And how did you first get involved with this? Did you start as being in Super Sack, or did you just kind of get tossed into it?
I was tossed into it. I knew of Super Sack. I didn't really know much about it. I knew that there are students coming together to talk about policy issues and a lot of other things going through the district, but I didn't know that I could be involved in it. And it's all really thanks to my vice principal, Kim Patterson, at Grand High School, who really just said, this is an opportunity you need to take, and take it. And I was like, okay, sure. You know, I kind of put it off a little bit, but eventually I got into it and was elected by the Super Sack Council. And I replaced the former student rep, Holly Vandershaft. So.
Awesome. And how long are you a student representative then?
For 1 year.
1 year?
Yes. So you have to be the student rep, you have to be a junior. And they, you have to go through the election process through Super Sack, and they will elect you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so how much work do you find yourself having to do? Because, I mean, right now you're not in school, but you'll be in school starting in September, and you'll be expected to still, you know, be learning about all these policies and, you know, representing basically the youth of Portland, more or less.
Yes.
So are you anxious or nervous about that?
A little, yeah, I am. Very. It's going to be hard. I have AP classes. You know, I'm signed up for at least three. I have a full schedule. And, you know, trying to balance that extracurricular activities, it's going to be very hard. I have to read at least, you know, up to 20 emails a day. I have to go through board policies, board books, go to all the board meetings, which can run up to 11 o'clock at night. And Super Sack, so it's like back to back. There's no break on Mondays, period. Like, my Mondays are full from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, no doubt. Is Super Sack something that is primarily in Portland, or is this something that is possible in any state, or what?
Definitely. It's not unique to Portland. There are a lot of other school boards. For example, the Washington, D.C. school board has a student representative, and they also have a student council. So the council itself is not unique to Portland, but I find that the student voice is very, very strong here in Portland, and they pay more attention to it. Not to say that other states don't, but I didn't hear about it until I came to Portland. So it's definitely cool here. It's definitely more you're able to be more involved as a student in Portland.
That's awesome. And so unfortunately, we have to wrap it up pretty quickly, but who is allowed to be involved in Super Sack?
Basically, all the high school students. I would like for every high school to be represented in Portland. I would like Madison, Marshall, Franklin, all the high schools, and it's from 4 to 6, probably one or two Mondays a month. And they're not, it's 4 to 6 in the afternoon. It's not in the morning anymore. So everyone can come. And it's, I would like everyone to come. And it's free food. So, you know, you should want to come. Yeah.
Awesome. And how do you get involved with that?
You can contact your principal. You can contact your vice principal, your counselor. People generally who work at your school should know about SuperSAC and should be able to lead you to who I am, and definitely can come to the meetings.
Awesome. And what's your favorite part about being in SuperSAC and being the representative?
You definitely get to meet a lot of people that you wouldn't have met otherwise. Like, I don't think I would have talked to people from other high schools if we didn't all come together at SuperSAC and just discuss issues that affect us personally.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being here today with us. Again, I was speaking with Antoinette Myers, who is the student representative on the Portland Public Schools board, and she's also a junior.
Will be a senior.
Will be
year.
A senior at Grant yes. High School. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, that was Brianna, and up next is Felicia talking about the Darfur benefits.
Hi, my name is Felicia. I'm new to the Youth Collective, and I'm here to tell you about a benefit put together by myself and a few other youth working in ties with Outside In. We have been putting together this show for the past few months in order to support positive change on a current issue we feel should get a little more attention. Right now, as you might know, in Africa there's a conflict officially named genocide happening in Sudan. Darfur has been considerably cited in the elections debates, and also a sprinkle here or there of information in the media, from minimal news coverage to a few celebrities speaking out on the topic. So I'm just going to take my time on the show today to give you a little bit of knowledge and tell you what we can do from home base. Since February of 2003, there's been an armed conflict between the people of Darfur and the Sudanese government funding a group of nomadic militiamen that call themselves the Janjaweed. There are many factors contributing to this violence, a few being fertile land disputes, lack of water resources, and conflicting religious views. The Janjaweed are invading villages with government oversight to rape, torture, and murder the people of the villages, burning down their homes, looting their possession, and leaving a disturbing upward number of women, men, and children who survived the terror, leaving them displaced and in dire need of vaccinations, food, and shelter without the ability of returning to their lives or the places they once called their homes. The 23 fur villages have been completely depopulated, looted, and burnt to the ground. Meanwhile, alongside these charred locations are unharmed, populated, and functioning Arab settlements. In some locations, the distance between a destroyed fur village and an Arab village is less than 500 meters. That's 6 Portland city blocks, almost. Aid workers and journalists have had their lives taken without mercy to contain information about the genocide, obstructing the idea of peace. According to UN reports, 200,000 to 450,000 are declared dead, and more than 2,500,000 are refugees. The numbers of the African troops to the refugees are too small to fight off the militia attacks. Only half of the refugees are receiving aid, and though for those numbers, there are only one humanitarian for every 341 refugees. At the moment, the U.S. government has imposed economic sanctions on Sudan, eliminating ability for trade with 31 companies, 30 of them directly owned by the Sudanese government. So here's what you can do. On August 4th, the benefit entitled In the Name Of will be held at Liberty Hall in North Portland on Ivy Street from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. It's all ages, so everybody can come. And we've got Autopilot, Apache Pomway, and Alia Ferreira. There will also be performances by Outside In's Guerrilla Theater, and an appearance by Black Butterfly. There's a $5 to $10 sliding scale cover at the door, and donations are the intention, so whatever you can do is the best you can do, as long as you're doing it. All the money earned will go to Doctors Without Borders, an independent international medical humanitarian organization that delivers emergency aid to people affected by armed conflict, epidemics, natural or man-made disasters, or exclusions from health care in more than 70 countries. They go in, take care of the victims' need without the government or religious bias. All will be specifically donated to Darfur refugee camps. So again, come see what we got going on August 4th at Liberty Hall, 6 to 10 p.m. Come eat, dance, maybe learn something, because nothing's going to happen if nobody does anything. Have a fun day. I'm Felicia, and I can't wait to see you there.
I did this next interview with Bethany Hartung on June 13th. to help people become more aware of young people with cancer. Bethany passed away on June 23rd, and I hope that Bethany's story will inspire more people to become involved in the search for better treatments for young people with cancer.
I was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia when I was 19 years old, and since then I have been through multiple chemotherapies and through a bone marrow transplant, and none of them have quite gotten rid of my leukemia. And so at one point I came to a place where I had to choose either to continue treatment or to terminate it, and ended up choosing to terminate treatment, and since then have been just living life, doing the things that I love, and spending time with family and friends that I really care about. And that's kind of basically what's happened. I said I was diagnosed when I was 19, and that was about 2.5 years ago. So since then, I've been through lots of different treatments, and just unfortunately haven't found one that got rid of whatever it is that has overtaken my body. I found that there's just a lack of knowledge about cancer in kind of the adolescent, young adult age group, which is kind of like 15 to 40. It is the leading killer in that age group. Every year I know that 70,000 more people are diagnosed in that age group. But when you think of a cancer patient, you tend to think of pediatric patients, and you think of elderly patients, and then there's kind of this gap in between that gets missed. And for that age group of 15 to 40, statistics haven't changed for survival rates since 1975, whereas there's been drastic improvements since then in the older and the pediatric age group. So that's one issue that comes up with that age group. The other thing is that there's unique needs for that huge age group that don't get addressed a lot of the time, like issues with fertility and issues with becoming really self-conscious of your image, because you have to go on, you know, steroids and a lot of different drugs that alter your appearance drastically. And so just feeling like you don't quite feel like yourself, but you don't know how to explain that to somebody who doesn't, who hasn't really been through it themselves, because maybe they can still feel old you, but all you see when you look in the mirror is, you know, somebody who's on steroids and has a really puffy face and whose body shape has been altered and stuff like that. So what I guess I wanted, the message I want to get out is that there's a lot of issues that can be addressed and helped just through programming and people volunteering time to address these problems and look at them more. So I think we're trying to get the message out through mostly through just communicating with other people issues that I have faced and that other people I've run into through the course of my treatment have also faced. So, and I think a lot of it is just word of mouth, you know, making people aware that this is a problem and that it's truly something that exists and that people can easily helpless. And there's a new clinic that opened at OHSU for young adults, and people could come up and easily volunteer or give to the foundation funding or anything for new programs where they can set up sessions where that age group can kind of start to progress into something more permanent. I think I just want to say, you know, thank you for listening, and hopefully this will inspire somebody to go out and make a difference and work towards some of these goals that the Elephant and Young Adult Clinic does have.
The clinic Bethany mentioned is called the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Clinic. It is part of OHSU. You can reach it at 503-994-6594.
Okay, thank you. That was Margaret's piece. And up next is a piece by the Laundry Sisters to help our listeners pick a pet that's right for them.
Hello, this is Zoe.
And Brianna.
With how to pick the perfect pet.
Do you live in a small house but want a big pet?
Or are you having trouble picking a first pet for your family?
Then you've come to the right place. To get started, we have some questions from listeners, just like you, who are eager to get a new addition to their family. Our first one is from Elevator Bob in Wisconsin. Bob writes, "Dear How to Pick the Perfect Pet, I live in a small apartment, but would like to get my daughter a pet for her 5th birthday. We don't have very much money or room. What do you suggest?"
Well, Bob, a hamster or a rat might be the perfect pet for your home. Both are inexpensive and easy to care for, and don't need a lot of space to be happy. Hamsters and rats are easy to find at a local pet store, and only need wood chip bedding and an appropriate cage and some affordable food.
Thanks, Zoe. The Doorknob family in Nebraska wrote to us, "Dear How to Pick the Perfect Pet, we want to get a family pet, but we're all so busy that we have to get something that doesn't demand a lot of attention. Zoe, what kind of pet should we get?"
A cat might be the perfect pet for your family. Cats are happy being loners, but also love the attention of humans when available. You can find cats at local pet stores or at your local humane society. They can be a little spendy and require some shots, but are otherwise easy and affordable.
And our last question of the day comes from Sally McDoodle in Washington. Sally writes, "My husband is tired of mowing our 3 acres of land and wants to get a goat to do it for him. Dear How to Pick the Perfect Pet, would a goat really keep our lawn trimmed?"
Although goats do love to eat, they graze in spots and prefer trees and blackberry bushes to grass. So unless you are looking to clear unwanted blackberries from your property, a goat won't be much help to you.
And now it's time for our fun animal facts.
Did you know that unlike other geckos, the leopard gecko doesn't have sticky pads on their feet and are one of the few geckos that have eyelids and don't have to lick their eyes to keep them moist?
And it turns out that cats are smarter than dogs. Domestic cats learn that humans communicate verbally to get their way, so cats began to meow. Cats in the wild don't make much noise because there aren't any humans to talk to.
And that's it for this edition of How to Pick the Perfect Pet. Join us next month for our special feature, The Cabot, Fact or Fiction. Okay, thank you. That was How to Pick the Perfect Pet.
Up next is a piece by me, Annie, and it was a piece that I made in February, and it was about feminism because the theme for that month was women's history and feminism. It did not air, however, because I made 2 pieces and we ran out of time, but since this is a no-theme theme, it got recycled onto this show. Enjoy!
Who Feminism is the new F word. A word that can be so empowering and mean so much to so many people, but is often labeled with negative and biased connotations. Why is it that feminism is so scary? Why do we constantly reinforce the stereotypes of feminism? For having come so far as a women's liberation movement, we still have a long way to go. I won't deny the fact that I once feared being associated with feminism, as do many women and even men. But I didn't understand why I couldn't be into really girly, shallow things like makeup and still be an advocate of the push for equality. I think a lot of the asexuality that came with the second wave of feminism really killed off the notion that feminism isn't exclusive, that you don't have to be one kind of person or another to be a feminist. Thankfully, the third wave came about simply because a lot of women felt marginalized by the mainly middle-class, middle-aged white women's movement they saw, characterized by luminaries such as Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem. With the emergence of the third wave as a reaction to early 90s criticism that feminism was dead or that we were in a state of post-feminism, there came a greater acceptance and recognition of all women, and new classifications like womanist, girly, and pro-sex feminist sought to include any person whose goal it was to work towards women's liberation and equality among the sexes. Perhaps the fact that third wave also includes much younger women, college, high school, and even junior high school girls, is why I am not afraid to call myself a feminist. Ever since I stopped denying the fact that I was one, I realized that feminism is so much more than just women's lib. That term itself can mean so many things to so many different people. But what is most important is what feminism means to you, as an individual, and the power that it gives you to get up and live your life as you please. For me, when I realized that wearing cherry red lipstick didn't automatically disqualify me as a feminist, that in fact I could use my denial to give up my feminism for what some may deem as sexualizing myself and giving in to capitalism and the man as a means of breaking the rules of what is and is not feminism. Who's to tell me I can't buy expensive things that make me feel good? Isn't the whole idea of liberation to be able to do what you want and to feel good? If wearing lipstick makes me feel good, and I'm not doing it for the man in either sense of the word, I don't see anything wrong with it. Feminism in the third wave has affected me immensely in every aspect of my life. Having grown up with one of the first generations of ardently feminist moms, feminism comes as second nature to a lot of people my age. It's something I can always hold on to as the one sure thing that I'll always have. Going to the rock and roll camp for girls at the critical age of pre-adolescence was the first hardcore injection of feminist ideology in my life. The camp is so closely based on the principles of the Riot Girl movement of the early 90s, with workshops like zine making, body image, self-defense, and women music in the media. And the overall sense of inclusion and total empowerment is what really makes the camp an amazing place. The women volunteers, virtually all of whom have gone through the experiences of feminism and being a woman musician in a seemingly liberated but deceptively backwards day and age, are there to teach young girls ages 8 to 18 how to play instruments that through sexist tradition are generally reserved for boys, and to support them through the process of forming a band with other girls and working to make one amazing song. The body image workshop was the first time anyone had ever told me it was okay to not want to look like a supermodel. And when I think back on it, I wonder how many girls in this country grew up without ever hearing that, and it makes me want to tell every girl I know that they are beautiful just the way they are. Being taught to play chord progressions by a very patient Carrie Brownstein of Sleater-Kinney, before I could even appreciate Sleater-Kinney, made me overcome my fear of being a girl and wanting to play guitar, an idea that is still so shocking to an immense number of people in this world. I can't tell you where I'd be without my feminist empowerment. I think a lot of girls in my age demographic are really lost, because we're at the age where we're trying to identify and distinguish ourselves from one another, but as humans we have the urge to bond and assimilate, and that can be really difficult, and a lot of girls tend to fight against each other and say and do nasty, malicious things to each other for the silliest reasons like popularity in boys. But while we're fighting against each other, we really ought to be working together and sticking out for each other. It's still a really messed up world, and there's still plenty of sexism, and the best thing we can do as young, ambitious, and socially conscious people is to resist the inequality and spread the word to every girl we know, and every boy too, that we're not going to take it, and we're going to put up a fight. We need to bring the F word out into the open and make people realize that when right-wing King Pat Robertson says that feminists encourage women to leave their husbands, kill their children, practice witchcraft, become lesbians, and destroy capitalism, that's just a biased description of no-fault divorce laws, abortion rights, rejection of God as a father, acceptance of female sexuality, and a commitment to workers. I want to do everything I can to encourage liberation and empowerment, and I want to not only make my friends feel the click of feminist consciousness, but I want them to feel driven enough by it to tell their friends about it too. So listener, I leave you with this. You don't have to be some boring old lady in a suit on Capitol Hill to make a difference in women's rights. You can be whoever you want to be. Just be you. Read Naomi Wolf and Andrea Dworkin. Subscribe to girl zines and support independent media. Love your body, dance and sing routinely. Tell every girl you know that they are beautiful in their own unique way. Don't put up with snide remarks from idiot men directed to you or any other woman. Love yourself enough to show that you're willing to fight for your equality and liberation.
Okay, that was Annie's The F Word, and up next is
the Renaissance Arts Academy at Marshall Campus invites local musicians to perform and be interviewed by the Pulse of Portland. It's a music project class. Kong Pham interviews Level 7, a local gospel rap group.
Hi, I'm Kong Pham from Renaissance Arts Academy at the Marshall High School campus. Our music production class has interviewed a local gospel rap group called Level 7. May you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right, my name is Luel Fantroy. I went to high school. I was graduation class of 2003. I was born in Los Angeles, but I was raised in Oregon, in Portland. I come from a Christian home, a Christian family. You know, I was young, and I kind of ran away from the faith and got into the world and got into all kinds of crazy stuff. And I met Jesus, and he changed my life, and he washed all the things that wasn't, you know, washed all the sin away and cleansed me. Therefore, I'm a new man now, and he showed me where to go. And then all of a sudden, I started being more responsible, and I start being youth leaders at a church. We start being better role models to the youth. Our goal, we got a hope, and we got a mission, is to spread the gospel throughout the whole earth, and that's what I live for. And he put it on my heart, me and my brother, to have Level 7 reach heaven.
Level 7 reach heaven, God's golden hour. For the lost soul, man, we own the prize. Without Jesus Christ, this thing is going down. So through him, more than conquerors, we got a victory.
My name is Eldridge Fantroy, and this is my brother. You know, he already told you how we live in California. We came to Oregon, grew up here. And, you know, we grew up in a Christian home, but all through high school, I went to Gresham High School. I graduated in class of 2001.
I'm Caleb Oak. I go to Marshall. I've been saved my whole life. I started picking up drumming about last year, and I started in another group besides this one, an alternative rock Christian group, about a few months ago named Band of Brothers. I like music a lot because it really allows me to just show how I'm feeling. If I'm feeling mad, I'll go out and beat my drum set. If I'm feeling, you know, happy, then I'll go out and I'll beat my drum set. Either way, I can just show it through how I play, my style of playing it. And I've been just really trying to expand my style of playing my music the last couple months. So I decided to join up with Level 7 to see what else they could show me that I could practice on.
How do you guys get started and why? I started making music around my junior year. That's when I first started freestyling. It started off just freestyling with friends and stuff. And but before that, I used to write like poetry and stuff. I never thought, you know, I never thought about rapping. Luel, on the other hand, when we was real little, he used to rap and make CDs and stuff. And make, it actually wasn't CDs because they didn't have CDs back then, but it was a little tape player. And he used to do stuff. This was like when we was like real little. I was in the fifth grade, but I didn't think about rapping. And till my junior year, I was always good at writing because I used to read a lot. So I used to just write a whole bunch of stuff. And then as I got older, it turned into rap. And then so I was trying to, you know, play football slash be a rapper. That was my dream. But then once I started living for the Lord again, it's kind of shifted. My dream was still, I loved making music because I like this form of music because I feel like words is powerful. I always liked English because I feel like with the right words, you could change the world. So that really inspired me. Like, I got this message that I want to tell people, like, you know, but back then I didn't really have any message. It was just all what I was fed. That's what I rapped out. But then once I came to the Lord and I found this message, then I'm like, now this is the message that I can live for.
What is the meaning of level 7?
Level 7 represents completion. The 7 represents completion. You know, so considered a holy number, divine number. So that's the level we're trying to reach, a level of completion. And we soon will reach, which is heaven.
Who are your influences?
This is a tough question because only influence I really have right now is Jesus Christ. Bottom line, that's gonna be my major influence. As far as coming up before I had Jesus, it was the world.
So what are you guys' purposes?
The purpose of our music is not to make money, because we got other gifts where we'll make money off of. But the music is really just to get the message out there. Because like we make t-shirts and we got a lot of other gifts that we gonna make money.
If our fans wanted to contact you, do you have a website?
Yeah, you can just go put in like level 7 Reach Heaven. And then we got our music and stuff on MySpace. And we got a website. It's like level7reachheaven.com. But it's in the process of being made. So if you go there, it'll just say coming soon. So the best thing is to just go to our MySpace.
I appreciate the songs Level 7 makes. The lyrics are motivating, and to others, it can give them hope or faith. I like the use of words they use. Matches the rhythm, and it's very unique. This has been Kong Fam from the Pulse of Portland Music Project.
Thanks for listening to The Underground. The Underground is hosted every fourth Wednesday by the KBU Youth Collective. We meet every Wednesday at KBU at 6 p.m. to plan our show. If you're interested in getting involved, come on down or call our youth advocate, Aaron Yankee, at 503-231-8032, extension 511, or email her at advocate@kbu.org. We also do a music show, Youth Randomonium, the last Friday of every month from 11 to midnight, and we're always looking for new music by anyone under 21 of any style. Check out our website at kbooyouth.org. The first and third Wednesdays of the month, Circle 8 Radio airs at this time, and the second Wednesday of the month, Hole in the Bucket, a public affairs show on homelessness, airs from 6 to 7. Next up is Nonstop Hip Hop. Thanks for listening.